This reading will be from Luke chapter 11, verses 37 through 54, the end of the chapter. While Jesus was speaking, a Pharisee invited him to dine with him. So he went in and took his place at the table. The Pharisee was amazed to see that he did not first wash before dinner. Then the Lord said to him, "Now you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You fools, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? So give for alms those things that are within, and see, everything will be made clean for you. But woe to you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and herbs of all kinds, and neglect the justice and love of God. It is these you ought to have practiced without neglecting the others. Woe to you, Pharisees, for you love to have the seat of honor in the synagogues and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces. Woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves, and people walk over them without realizing it." And one of the lawyers answered him, "Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us also." And he said to them, "Woe also to you, lawyers, for you load people with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not lift a finger to ease them. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets whom your ancestors killed. So you are witnesses and approve of the deeds of your ancestors, for they killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore also the wisdom of God said, 'I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute, so that this generation may be charged with the blood of all the prophets shed since the foundation of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be charged against this generation. Woe to you, lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter for yourselves, and you hindered those who were entering. When he went outside, the scribes and the Pharisees began to be very hostile towards him and to cross-examine him about many things, lying in wait for him to catch him in something he might say." Well, good morning, nice people. I like nice people. I was going for a run. I guess that was on Friday. And as I've been on my runs going through Alameda on Park Street, you know where that is, the past couple of weeks, sometimes there have been protests I've been running. And this Friday, there was actually a protest in the middle of an intersection on Park Street. And it was very loud. And there was a lot of dancing. But it wasn't happy dancing. It was like extremely aggressive and a lot of shouting. And I didn't like it. I support Black Lives Matter, and I actually think that the protests that are happening are really excellent. And even some of the stuff that's scaring a lot of people hasn't seemed so out of place to me. But when I was actually running down the street and just sort of ran past this extremely intense and angry and aggressive protest, I didn't like it. It wasn't nice. So I want to talk about nice people and why I like being nice. I like people who make me feel welcome and heard and respected. I like people who are polite. I like people who show courtesy. They might even be nice enough to laugh at my jokes. That would be nice. It's nice to be nice. But Jesus wasn't nice. He was courageous and compassionate. He was loving and he was strong, but nice? Not really. In our reading this morning, Jesus gets invited to the house of a local religious leader, a pious man, a wealthy man, a man well-respected in his community, the kind of man who would host a visiting rabbi in his home. Jesus isn't nice to this man at all. In fact, he's downright rude to his host. It all starts with not washing his hands before dinner. So this is kind of a weird thing that I felt like needed a bit of unpacking, this whole washing hands before dinner. Because in our culture, we understand hand washing as a hygienic practice. right? It's about avoiding the spread of disease. And especially now in the age of COVID, it's more important than ever to practice hand washing. And washing our hands regularly is an act of compassion, both for ourselves and for other people, right? So we don't get sick. But in our reading this morning, we need to lay aside our culture's relationship with hand washing and what we understand it's for. And we need to step into the ancient Near Eastern culture that Jesus and his countrymen were inhabiting. This is a pre-scientific culture. They didn't know about germs. So why did the Pharisees consider it so important to wash hands before dinner? Why was it so offensive that Jesus didn't do it? So again, for us, washing hands is more of a public health concern than a matter of politeness. But we have things like this in our culture too. There are things in our culture that are closer to this ancient Near Eastern practice of hand washing. Practices that are tied to ideas of inside and outside, clean and unclean, common and sacred. Practices that are about marking boundaries and showing respect. One practice like this is one that our family ran into recently. When we moved to California about a year and a half ago, we noticed that a lot of folks, there are lots of cultural differences between Washington, D.C. and the Bay Area. And one of them is that a lot of folks out here have the tradition of removing shoes before entering the house. It's a nice way to keep the inside of the house clean. And it also sort of symbolizes the move from the rough and tumble of the outside world to the protected inside world of the home. So since moving here, our family has actually adopted this practice. It feels nice. So now I'm imagining Jesus coming to visit our family for a dinner party. And when he comes in, he knows that he's expected to remove his shoes at the entryway and to wear his dusty shoes up into our house and possibly get dirt and mud on our carpet. That'd be a little gross. And it would be a little bit disrespectful. And that's exactly what Jesus does to the prominent local leader that has invited him to dinner. It says that the Pharisee was amazed to see that he did not wash before dinner. Now, the word wash here is the same Greek word that's used for baptize. It's a ritual washing that pious Jews practice before eating. It marks the boundary between the dirt and the grime, the uncleanness of the outside world, and the protected, clean space of the home. So by not washing his hands, Jesus was ritually defiling this man's home and dinner table. It's kind of like refusing to take off your shoes in the home of a family where it's expected to leave shoes at the door. He was tracking mud onto this guy's carpet. So why would Jesus do this, right? It's kind of a no-brainer. When there's a ton of shoes stacked by the door, you take off your shoes when you come to the house. Why would Jesus choose to intentionally give offense in this way? And you're like, well, yeah, I mean, Jesus, you know, he's God. God does whatever he wants, and God doesn't really care about social customs. But we know that's not true, right? We know that Jesus, in other stories, is able to negotiate social situations. He's able to extend courtesy. I mean, think of the way he provided and received hospitality all the time. Think of the woman at the well. Think of the way Jesus fed his disciples with fish on the beach after the resurrection. Jesus was not socially inept. He was perfectly capable of being courteous and following the rules of hospitality if they were appropriate to the situation. So why did Jesus decide that now was the time to be inappropriate? It seems from the reading that Jesus didn't violate the rules of cleanliness by accident or just because he was feeling cranky that day. Jesus broke what was a minor social custom in order to make a larger point about the character of the social order that his host and the other guests were participating in. "Woe to you, Pharisees," he said. "You follow all the little rules. You wash your hands before dinner. You even tithe from your spice rack to make sure you're not doing anything improper. But your hearts are full of arrogance and hatred. You're unmarked graves that people walk over without realizing it. And when one of the other guests at dinner, a religious scholar, pointed out, "Whoa, hey, Jesus, chill it out. You're not being very nice." Jesus doubled down. "Woe to you too, bro. Your legalistic religion loads people with burdens that you aren't willing to bear yourself. Sucks to be you. You build monuments to the prophets, but your ancestors who killed them." By the way, I like to translate woe to you as sucks to be you. It's basically the same thing. Jesus went on. He says, "You live in the spirit of your ancestors, the spirit of violence and oppression and resistance to truth. You enforce all the small rules while ignoring or violating the most important commandments of God. You religious scholars are supposed to be making the knowledge of God available to everyone, but you not only refuse to receive this knowledge for yourself, you prevent others from going there too." Jesus isn't very nice. He can't be, because these are such nice people, such courteous, rule-abiding people, that nothing but the unvarnished and offensive truth can break through the pleasantries. These are such respectable folks, they've convinced themselves that their hatred and arrogance is holy. In their deception of those around them, they've deceived themselves most of all. And so it gets me wondering, it's all well and good to talk about the Pharisees and their issues and the lawyers, but how would Jesus speak to us? How would he address my friends and family if we had him over for dinner? Would he charge us with the blood of all the prophets shed since the foundation of the world? Would he charge us with the blood of the prophets that's being shed even now in June 2020? Who are the prophets? Prophets are those people who hear and proclaim the words of God. They're people who speak the truth, even when it results in a violent response from the powerful. And the truth usually does elicit that kind of response. We've been seeing it in streets across America. Hundreds of thousands of protesters have taken to the thoroughfares of our cities to proclaim that Black Lives Matter. They've broken the little rules of traffic ordinances and politeness. They've tracked mud into our houses to get attention. They've tracked mud into Target and Wendy's to get our attention. They've been very impolite, and they've been very loud, just like Jesus, because they had to be. Politeness and propriety has failed to get the attention of the wealthy and white populations of this country that routinely benefit from police violence. The niceness of white moderates has cost countless lives. We can't afford to be nice anymore. We need to hear that violence and murder by the police is a daily occurrence that can no longer be tolerated. We have to see the blood of the prophets shed on the roads and on the sidewalks. We have to witness the blood of the prophets who are being shot with rubber bullets and choked with chemical agents and beaten with batons. We have to witness these things and then ask ourselves, who are we with? Are we with the Pharisees who follow all the little rules of niceness and cleanliness while the prophets are being murdered? Are we the religious scholars who preach a gospel of rules and purity while not living up to the deeper spirit of our creed? Are we those who celebrate and share quotations from Martin Luther King while embodying the moderate white liberalism that undermined his ministry at every turn? As we follow the example of Jesus, we have to learn that sometimes propriety and niceness is a form of structural violence. The gospel of Jesus Christ will not be confined to the contours of propriety and good social order. The kingdom of God will not be televised, and it will not take off its shoes at the front door. It's not enough for us to be good, respectable people. We're called to be the prophets, the apostles, sent by God to deliver the good news of liberation and reconciliation that this bleeding world so desperately needs. And like all prophets, we may be called to suffer as a part of this proclamation. Like our chief prophet, Jesus, it might be that we're called to bleed for our convictions. What would that look like? What does it feel like to be so liberated from complacency and hedged bets and conflict avoidance and respectability that we completely engage in God's prophetic work of transformation? We've gotten very good at cleaning the outside of the cup. But how often are we still full of greed and wickedness inside? How often are we submissive to the authorities of this world rather than the kingdom of our God? What would it mean for us to do as Jesus commands? And this is a weird phrase of Jesus. I think it's worth one worth sitting with and rereading. What would it mean for us to do as Jesus commands and give for alms those things that are within? Give for alms those things that are within. What does that mean? What do we have within us? What's the darkness within us that must be redeemed? What do we need to surrender? How will our lives and community be transformed when God makes everything, even disruption and conflict, clean for us? This morning, Jesus issues us a challenge. Will we be unmarked graves, or will we face down the power of death? Will we cower in fear while the blood of the prophets is shed in broad daylight? Or will we risk the life and power that comes from Jesus? Will we be voices crying in the wilderness? Prepare the way of the Lord. Make his path straight. That would be nice.